Welcome to the Dear Katie podcast. This is Katie Kessner, and today I am so pleased to welcome Isabella. We'll learn a little bit about Isabella in a moment, but for now, I want to remind all of our listeners how very important it is to take a moment and push pause if you need to. Self-care is everything. All of our conversations can always be triggering and difficult for many of us. But it is definitely the goal always of the podcast to grow stronger together and unite in our healing and learn from each other's survivorship and how we can do that and take those things into our own lives. So Isabella, welcome, welcome. We are so delighted to have you. We always like to start with a little bit about who you are, where you grew up, and your backstory. So tell us that part first.
Okay, thank you for having me. So I grew up in New York in Westchester. I went to high school there. I lived a pretty normal life. I'm the oldest of three younger siblings. I lived with both my parents. And high school was a good time for me. Sometimes they're pretty rough. I feel like that's pretty standard for most teenagers in high school. But I had always swam. That was my sport. So I had swam from when I was 8 years old on until my sophomore year of college. And so that's where I spent most of my time. I was very into school and outside activities. I always had a really great friend group that some of those friends I'm still friends with now. And yeah, after high school, I went on to college at Manhattan College, also in New York. I majored in psychology with a minor in business. And I was also on the swim team there. I was recruited to swim. And I swam for about 2 years until I inevitably quit. And my school is very small, not many people. When I first joined the swim team, it was very small as well. So it was a very close-knit community. And that's where I eventually ended up experiencing my assault. After those years, I just graduated this past May, and I've gone on to receive my master's degree in public administration from the University of Pennsylvania. And that's what I'm doing now. And it kind of sparked from my interest in policy and women's policy issues, specifically Title IX policy, because as a survivor in college, that when I did report, that was something I had to go through. So that kind of sparked my interest in what I'm doing now.
Yeah, it sounds really important work. Like, you know, you took something terrible and turned it around to empower yourself and help others. So thank you so much, Isabella, for doing that. What's your, just out of curiosity, we had an Olympic swimmer on one of our podcasts already, and she was incredibly powerful. What is your main stroke for swimming?
Yeah, I did see that. That was very cool. I did see she was on the podcast. My main stroke was butterfly, and I would also, my main event would be 200 IM.
Wow, that is great arm strength. Upper body work is incredible. I'm always enamored by the power of the butterfly.
Oh, it's a difficult one.
Yeah, I love it. So that's your favorite stroke. You go off to Manhattan College, which is definitely, did you live on campus?
Yes, I did. For my first 2 years.
For your first 2 years.
Year and a half.
Okay, so tell us then what happened that brings you to your microphone today.
Yeah, so some backstory for the assault itself was I had just joined the swim team, and within about 2 weeks, I had met this boy on the swim team. Even though it was very small, I kind of kept to just the girls at first. And I ended up meeting him through a friend. We ended up becoming very close and going to the library together, going to parties together, and eventually ended up dating. And this was probably about in mid-November we started dating. So at this point, we had all kind of the same friends. We had a very close-knit community. And about a year and a half after we had dated, we ended up breaking up. And that's kind of around when the assault happened.
Okay. So you've been together. How is the relationship going? And, you know, what were highlights and lowlights of that first year and a half?
Yeah. So like a lot of abusive relationships seem to be, everything starts out great in the beginning. For that full year and a half, everything was great. There were no complaints. I had never really been nervous or worried about dating a boy before, what kind of settings those could put me in coming out of high school. So it was kind of new for me to be dating in such a mature relationship the way that I viewed it at first, because you're away from home for the first time and all you really have are your friends around you. And at that point, my family had moved to Georgia, so they were pretty far away from me. So all I had were the people on my swim team at this point. After a year and a half, I had been experiencing some physical abuse in many ways, I would explain it. Here and there, he'd push me too hard or throw something at me or certain things like that that would happen and kind of just a really quick to rage.
What would set him off? Can you remember?
Yeah, I think so. Sometimes he was always very worried about me with other guys.
He was jealous of you even having male friends?
Yeah. So it wasn't too bad at first. I mean, it came from, I did have a relationship with a guy friend that I had, like where I ended up catching feelings for him. And then that kind of led to our breakup. But before that, he was always worried about that kind of thing. So things like that would spark in always when he was drunk. So that was one thing that was very hard for me to kind of come to terms with, was that I didn't want to end a relationship based on things that happened when someone was under the influence. And that's something I've now learned is very hard to do, but is definitely something that's necessary. But for me, I always separated being sober and being under the influence as you don't have control, so it's not really your fault.
Okay. That's so interesting, Isabel. Like, and so you were forgiving of him because you were like, he's not like that if he's sober.
Yeah, basically.
Gotcha.
So yeah, so that's kind of what happened. And I ended up catching feelings for another boy at that point. I wasn't sure if it, me detaching myself from that relationship had to do with these physical altercations when he was drunk, or if I didn't know at that point, because I didn't really see how bad they were until after, when I ended up eventually getting help. So at that point, we had broken up and it kind of happened. We kind of remained friends. We were still on the swim team together. We still saw each other every day, still had all the same friends. So we still were pretty close at that point. But when we had broke up, it was also close to the summer, so I didn't have to see him for another 2.5 months. So that's, I think we broke up probably in around April. And the assault ended up happening in mid-May.
Of your sophomore year?
Yes.
Okay.
So what happened at that point was, so we're now in April, we break up and we remain friends. And one night he had gone to a party with two of my friends that were on the swim team. And I had stayed at home and we were still trying to figure out how to have some kind of relationship with each other. We were still seeing each other at this point, but we weren't calling each other a boyfriend and girlfriend in a relationship. So he had lied to me about going out that night. And so I got pretty frustrated. And I said that he didn't need to lie to me, that I wanted to be open with each other at this point, that if we were ever really going to have a relationship again, we needed to rebuild this trust. So I told him that he should come over to my house later that night, whenever he was done at the party, and we would talk. And so at this point, he came to my house and I was living off campus. So this was second semester sophomore year is when I started living off campus. And I lived with four other roommates that were all on the swim team as well. He ended up coming over at about 2 or 3 a.m. So it was pretty late. All of my roommates were asleep. We had gone up to my room and he was very, very drunk. And this is something where I had to deal with a lot when we were dating, him being very, very emotional or quick to rage when he was drunk. So it was something that I was nervous about, but I also wanted to make sure that he was going to be okay because his roommates had also left him alone. So he comes over, he starts crying, he's very upset, saying that he misses me, wants to be back together with me, that I have made him miserable since we haven't been together, and all of these things. He then ends up harming himself by hitting himself against one of the walls outside of my house.
Oh, no.
So, yeah. So at this point, I get very nervous because I do still care about him. And I didn't really know what to do in this situation. If I was supposed to get help, if that would have gotten him in trouble, if I'm just supposed to deal with him myself. So I ended up taking him inside. I brought him up to my room. I got him water. I said, let's just sleep this off. We can talk in the morning. I'm here for you. We don't need to discuss this right now. So at that point, I bring him up to my room. We're talking and he just keeps going on and on and on about how his life has been miserable because of me and it's all my fault and he isn't okay and he wants to die and all of these terrible things about harming himself and how all of it is my fault.
Wow, that is distressing.
Yeah. So that part was very, it was hard to see someone obviously that I really care about going through such a hard time. And obviously it hurt to hear that those were things that I was being blamed for. And I knew deep down that it wasn't my fault, but the longer the night went on, I kind of started feeling more guilty and more guilty.
How do you think that he persuaded you to feel more guilty?
He kept just crying and saying that he missed me and just certain things like that. He would start talking about specifics about our relationship that kind of hit home. Like, it just really made me think about certain things. And I did still really care about him. So at first I was like, oh, you're just drunk. And these are just drunk words. But the longer it went on, the more nervous I started getting. Like, he kept hitting himself. At one point, he hit himself really hard and passed out for a while. And I didn't know if he was okay.
When you say hitting himself, like throwing himself into the wall, or what was he doing?
So at first he was hitting himself against the wall. And then the second part, he was hitting himself with his hands.
Okay.
And then I lived in a pretty old style apartment. So I had a heater in my room that was like one of those old school heaters that you could feel.
Like a radiator?
Yeah, like the radiator. Yeah, exactly. So he would like move his hand on it and be burning himself on it. And just things like that, that it was no longer just drunken words and being all upset. It was then actually becoming harmful and scary. So at that point is when him saying things like, this is your fault and all that, that's when it really started to get very serious for me and make me feel really guilty and terrible. And I kept trying to get him to stop. And this went on for about an hour and a half at this point.
My gosh.
Yeah, it was a very long time. And I didn't know what to do. And looking back, I don't know why I didn't go get help. I think I just didn't want him to get in trouble. I know that he had problems before, and I didn't want him to feel embarrassed. I didn't want other people to know what he was going through because it seemed private. There was just a lot going on where it kind of just seemed hard to get help in the moment. So after this has been going on for about an hour and a half, he then tells me that he'll go to sleep if we have sex. And so at this point, there were two instances in the night that would be considered as assault. And this would be the first one through coercion. And it was also finals week. So I had to wake up in the morning and study. And it's now 4:30 a.m. And I'm worried. I'm terrified, crying. I'm a mess. And he's like, I'll go to bed and I'll leave you alone. I'll stop hurting myself if we have sex. So at that point, I didn't know what else to do. I felt in that moment that I had tried everything else to try to calm him down. And so I let him. And then that lasted probably, it was very short, probably about like 3 minutes or so. And then I was like, that's it, I'm going to bed. And I just remember rolling over and crying and just knowing how wrong that felt. And I just didn't know what to do with it at that point. So that was very hard. But then I think that it's over. And I think that I can just go to bed and I can deal with whatever this big mess was tomorrow. And we had been, as I said before, we had dated for a year and a half before this. So I had never been okay with having sex without protection. That has always been something I was very big on, which was very known in our relationship. And he rolls me over, gets on top, and then starts having sex with me again without me giving consent, without me saying it was okay, without protection. And I keep telling him to get off and to get off. And it takes about 5 times of me telling him to stop for him to eventually stop.
Wow.
So it was, and then eventually everything ended. We go to bed. So that was the assault itself.
Right. Isabella, can I ask, you know, what a terrible mix of guilt, fear, and violation all at once, you know? And how did you even take the exam you had?
Yeah, so the next day I just had studying and my exam was the day after. So in the morning, it was very hard. I mean, I confronted him about it and he admitted to all of it and he seemed very upset. He seemed like he knew he did something wrong. And a common theme in our relationship was even if he had done something that was bad to me, the second that he started being all upset about what he had done, I then felt bad and would comfort him. So in this case, he started crying. He was very upset, felt very terrible about what he had done. And then so I started comforting him.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I still cared about him. I still hoped that he was okay. And things last night were very terrible for me. But at that point, I wasn't even letting that set in. I was only thinking about he was hurting himself.
I really appreciate our talking about this. Let's spend a little more time before we talk about where you are now. So we have this day and he's gone, but eventually, and you have the new boyfriend or no yet? You remember the other one?
Yeah. So I never ended up dating him.
You hooked up with him, but she never fully became like a couple.
Yeah.
Okay.
So at this point, it was just me.
And did you ever tell anybody about what happened that night? Like friends or the other guy or anybody? Or you just kept it a secret for a while?
Yeah. So I ended up reporting to Title IX, but a lot kind of happened before I ended up being able to get to that point. The next day, I had gone to study with one of my roommates who was also one of my closest friends. And I remember telling her, and she seemed very worried, and I didn't really give her details because I think in the moment I felt kind of ashamed and embarrassed. And so I didn't really want to give many details, but I did say that something happened sexually where I felt very, very pressured, and I did say no, and I just didn't feel good about it. And I remember her wanting to stop studying and talk about it, and she was very concerned. And I kind of just brushed it off, and I was like, this is finals week. I need to study. I don't have time to be thinking about this right now. That could be something we deal with another time. And that was kind of the end of it. And I didn't talk about it with anybody or really think about it that much for the next couple of weeks. And we had then entered the summer, and I remained in contact with him. And I remember many times of me bringing it up to him and him apologizing for it and me saying, yeah, I'm still not okay with that. I don't know how to cope. I don't know how to deal with being friends with you still, or if we still have a relationship. At that point, I really didn't understand how bad that night really was. And I just knew that I didn't want to lose people that I was close to.
Right. Especially, yeah, you were pretty alone by then. Okay. So then what finally gets you to decide to report, do you think?
So it was then my first semester of junior year, and everything's kind of a little bit back to normal. I'm still friends with everyone on the team. We went to a party.
Were you still swimming?
Yeah, I was still swimming at this
point. And you're a junior?
Yeah.
And were you living on campus still?
No, I was living off campus.
And an apartment?
Yes.
Okay.
So at this point, so we're at a party. Everyone had been drinking that night. He got pretty drunk again. And this was, I'd say, about a month into the semester at this point. And many nights before that, as the semester started, he would get really drunk and be really upset. And everyone was always blaming me. Or I wouldn't say everyone, but I would say his friends primarily would always.
What do you mean blaming you?
They would say that he was always getting so drunk and upset because I had broken his heart, and it was my fault that he was now like this.
Okay.
So it was, again, that sort of blame for him being mentally not okay. And I remember getting super frustrated about it and constantly telling him, you know what you did last semester, and you know that I'm not to blame for all of this. But you still are allowing all of your friends to blame me. And I remember I continued to ask him, you don't need to tell them what you did. Just stick up for me. Tell them that it's not all my fault. And that just never ended up happening. So the one thing that set me over the edge was this party a month into the semester. He was very drunk. And I was hanging out with other people from the swim team that were in his apartment after the party. And he was sleeping on the couch or pretending to sleep on the couch. And I get up to leave, and I close the door to the apartment, but I'm still by it because I'm waiting for my friend to come pick me up to walk me home. So I can still hear pretty much whatever the boys are talking about. And then I just hear him screaming, calling me, I don't know what words I'm allowed to say on this.
Calling you terrible names.
Calling me terrible names, very misogynistic sort of language. And that was just the last straw when it came to this. So I remember I went up and I just yelled, you raped me and no one here knows. And you're sitting here calling me all of these names and blaming me for everything. And meanwhile, you are the one who took things too far, who did a terrible thing.
Right.
And at that point, I wasn't really thinking about the fact that there were other people in the room. I was just so angry at him in that moment for treating me a certain way, knowing what he had done and admitting to it. And I guess the next day I felt so embarrassed. I didn't want to talk about it at all. I just wanted to drop it and act like it never happened. But then some of the boys on the team had told me that he was telling them that I was a liar and none of them believed me. And I was once again a terrible person for hurting him more because now I'm accusing him of something he didn't do.
Right. Finally, it glued into your head that you were in the right and you didn't have to be afraid anymore.
Exactly. So
it was almost like you finally said, I've got this. I know it in my heart. And I wanted to make sure he did. Did you say, I don't want him to do this again? Like, was it justice for you? Or was it also trying to make sure he wouldn't continue harming others?
Well, my first thought after people had been accusing me of lying was, okay, hold on. I was totally okay with us never talking about this again. But now that I'm being accused of lying, I'm not going to let that slide. So at this point, it was about justice for myself, but I still didn't want to report. But I just wanted people on the team to know that I wasn't lying. So I had tried to tell most people. And I did know that I told my friend when it did happen, so she knew. And I just kept trying to express that I wasn't lying. And it was kind of a she said, he said thing at this point. So there had also been drama on the team between me and some of the girls before because of a whole unrelated situation. But because of that, it then led them to not want to take my side on this stance. And some of my roommates were really supportive and said, no, like that's just stupid. It was like stupid drama over a boy. And they were like, that shouldn't be the reason that you don't stand by someone who's been assaulted. Because at the end of the day, they kind of made it so that you had to choose sides. And I feel like with assault, there is, you stand with the survivor. Otherwise, you're not. And so I think at that point, things just kind of went downhill from there. So the people that were on my swim team were really my only friends because we didn't really branch out outside of the swim team as a collective. So they stopped inviting me to parties. I wasn't allowed to go to their apartment, but my ex, his apartment was the one that threw most of the parties. So the swim team would always go there, even after I had accused him of what I did. Even some of them did say that they believed me. They would still go to his parties, but I wasn't allowed. So I got really shut off and isolated from everyone. It was just, I was kind of just like left alone at that point. There was only two of my roommates wouldn't go to his apartment because they thought it was wrong just to ignore it and show up in a space near him. But the rest of the team and even people that I had called my friends for almost 3 years at this point, who I had been very close with in the past, would still go to his parties, take pictures with him, hang out with him, basically like nothing had happened. And this went on for about a month or so. And I remember I had met up with him one night because it ended up creating this thing where I was so isolated that I still was going back to him. Even though I had openly acknowledged everything that he did, I would go back to him and spend time with him just to cry to someone at that point because it was just so isolated and most of my friends seemed to have chosen him. And so it just created this toxic relationship all over again where I was searching for comfort from the person who made me need the comfort in the first place. And a lot of people on the team had said to me, why should we stop talking to him and stop hanging out with him when you're still seeing him? And I think that if I had had that support from the beginning, then I wouldn't have had such a hard time and I wouldn't have been seeing him again. But it didn't really work out that way. And long story short, it ended up happening for another month and a half. And two of my roommates sat me down and said, you need to report him. This is getting out of hand. No one on the swim team is caring. Nobody's doing anything about it. They're treating him like nothing. And you're out here. You're on the outs. You've now quit the team because you can't mentally be around these people anymore. You can't see him anymore. And it kind of just seems like you're getting the very, very short end of the stick and everything else is continuing as normal. And that's kind of when I decided that it was time and that I had to report, because at this point I was being told that other girls that were freshmen on the team were worried for their safety, but I didn't want to contribute to maybe if I had reported, maybe something doesn't happen to them, or maybe if I don't report, maybe something happens to them one night at a party and it's because of him.
So in our last 5 minutes or so, as we wrap up this discussion and what happened and all of that, I think it's really important, Isabella, to say you did report, you did go through the process. What was the outcome? And then how has it your healing journey been? You know, like, tell us a little bit about how you finished up at Manhattan and then how you got to Penn, and, you know, give us where three highlights, I guess, from the reporting phase, and then, you know, three more things that happened to carry you to where you are now at Penn, like having finished and been a leader and done Take Back the Nights, and, you know, it's incredible. So give us three highlights of how you went from this dark place to this amazing place.
Yeah. So the process was very, very rough. I think going through that, I fully understand why many people don't report. I think it's important to always report, but it was definitely very difficult. There was a big lack of communication. My school had a big lack of funding. So my investigators were professors and people that I knew and saw on campus all the time. The process took about 3 months. So I still saw him on campus almost every day during that time. And eventually I had my hearing, and thankfully he admitted what he had done, and he ended up getting suspended for a year. So when it was my senior year, he technically could have come back for the second semester, but he didn't. But yeah, I was told, I was still really upset with the outcome, because I couldn't understand how someone could admit to doing all of that and it not be expulsion, period. But
but just so you remember, Isabel, that was what happened to me. Right? Like, so he admits it in the hearing, like yours, and says, oh, Katie did say no 19 times, but eventually she stopped saying no. So it's like, unfortunately, decades later, things are still not better. So you better darn keep up this fight, Isabella. I'm just saying, we've got miles to go before we sleep.
Exactly. And I had an amazing hearing panel. I was very, very lucky to have that. I had three women on my hearing panel that were all very strong-minded and were asking all the hard questions.
But at least, you know, if the outcome isn't fulfilling, the process sounds like at least it felt right.
Yeah, I was very, very happy that I went through it, because I did learn a lot. And I was told at that point that him being suspended for a year was amazing and unheard of. And I was very, very lucky that's what I got out of it, because most people didn't. And that just made me angry. And so from that process, I decided that I didn't want anybody to feel the way that I did, to feel that they didn't have these resources or the support, because I was so alone for a lot of this process. And I didn't want anyone to have to feel that way. And I didn't want anyone to have to feel super happy about a 1 year suspension. So I then went on to join the Women's Center as an intern. I did everything I could when it came to sexual assault awareness and prevention. I started our campus's It's On Us chapter to try to spread education on sexual assault and sexual assault prevention. I led the Take Back the Night event. I co-led survivor support groups on Mondays. And yeah, I really just dove into all of that work. I ended up being a New York City changemaker, which is, it's with the organization for the Alliance Against Sexual Assault. And we fought for increased funding for Enough is Enough legislation. And it was just, honestly, it was very, very hard after that. But I had shared my story so many times and I had just so badly wanted something good to come out of this because it just angered me. I was just so angry at the process, at the outcome that I was supposed to be grateful for having. And I knew that most women in my school didn't get that opportunity. And I had heard that in that year that I had reported, all women that had reported had left the school. And I was the only one that had stayed.
Wow.
And so that, it kind of just, it inspired me and it made me feel like, okay, I stayed and I stayed for a reason and I need to do something about it.
I'm so proud of you, Isabella. I mean, I think, you know, I'm sure I'd love to hear another chapter of your story down the road after you've accomplished even more. But for the, you know, the wrap up, I think you taught our listeners and myself about, you know, the human frailty of forgiveness and guilt and wanting to be kind and wanting to help and not hurt. And that, although it ended up hurting you, is a beautiful thing that even in the face of your own abuse and own assault, you still tried to be kind to him. And most people would look at that and then turn around and say what those other people, you know, like you, those other swimmers and everybody around you was looking at it without your emotional first person perspective. And when others assume that they can even understand a moment, a minute, an hour, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours, a 4:30 a.m. moment, like you described, it's unfair of others to blame when they aren't there with you.
Yeah. And I do want to say that one thing that I think maybe helped other people, especially on the team, was after I reported, they all then had my back.
Yay.
And I think that it was, that part was great, but I think it really highlighted what happens in our society where it took him having to admit it and me having to report to higher up people for people to actually listen.
Yeah. And most of us don't have a perpetrator who says, I did this.
Exactly.
I certainly can vouch for that myself in the many various situations. And at some point, there's like exhaustion when things happen for so long, so often. To women. I'll say to women because a lot of it is against women, but you know, anyone can be a victim. So let's conclude with any final takeaway you'd like to offer to our listeners. Isabella, any final thought of empowerment for them?
Yes, I think the most important thing to do is, whether you're a survivor or not, is to educate yourself on what is okay and what isn't. And I think that can save so many people's lives. It can save their mental health. If I would have known the signs, or I would have known how bad things were to begin with, maybe things wouldn't have gone on for as long as they did.
Right.
And I think just putting yourself out there and knowing that I ended up having great support in friends that I met after, and my girlfriend now, who they went out of their way to educate themselves on how to support a survivor. And I think that that is something that's really important as people that are outside of it who may have not experienced assault themselves. And I think that if you have experienced it yourself, just trying not to blame yourself is probably the hardest thing that I still struggle with, is trying not to at times feel guilty or like I played a part in that happening. Because no matter what you do, that should never happen. That should never, ever happen to you.
Absolutely.
No matter if you cheat on someone, if you tell them you hate them, no matter what you do, if you're drunk, anything. And just keeping that peace with you and knowing that you are still strong and good can still come of it because of your strength.
Absolutely. That was so well said. So well said, Isabella. And to all of our listeners, this has been another Dear Katie podcast. Survivor stories, so empowering, so helpful, so healing for all of us. And remember always, you are never alone. As Isabella said, we are all in this together, no matter where we are on the planet, no matter our age, no matter our life story and our demographics. So please find hope and healing and beauty and our survivorship. So plenty of resources, including our legal hotline, are on the website. Please don't ever think that you're not entitled to justice, that everyone is entitled to their voice and their stories and their truth. You know, we have a cool amount of like artist shirts. I'm always thinking like sometimes you just need something right next to your skin to feel I've got something around me that's supporting you. So again, Isabel, thank you so much. And for our listeners, continue to strive through healing. We will find strength and we are not alone. We hope you'll join us again for another episode of Dear Katie Survivor Stories. Take care.